We shall now turn for a little to the Word of God, to the Book of Psalms, and the Psalm 9. Psalm 9, and in considering this psalm, again you will see that it is a psalm of David. And as you go through the psalms, you find all the varied experiences of David in the Psalms. Sometimes he's full of joy, other times he's in great sorrow. Sometimes, as here in this Psalm, he's saying, I will praise thee, O Lord. In other Psalms, he's lamenting, how long wilt thou forget me, Lord? And so we see from the Psalms how varied the experiences of the Lord's own people can truly be. And we are not then to imagine, well, some experiences are not as spiritual as others. Some ought not to be. Maybe when we read some of the laments of the psalmist, we might think, well, he should not have been thinking the way he was thinking. He should not be speaking the way he's speaking. He should not be recalling these events in his experience that can be perhaps in the minds of some discouraging or unedifying. What we have to know, as the psalmist knew himself, as we see in this psalm, he knew that whatever was happening, God was in control. And so all his experiences, he knew, had a purpose, and they were divinely ordered by God. And his times of grief, his times of discouragement, were all necessary to make him the man after God's own heart that he truly was. But in this psalm, it is clearly from the very beginning to be seen as a psalm of praise. I will praise thee, O Lord. Whatever others do, I will praise thee. And you will see that he does it with great confidence. He says, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. When you read through the life and the experiences of David, it very quickly becomes aware, obvious that David did everything with all his heart. David was not one of those people who could engage in some activity or exercise or engage in some work half-heartedly. It was not in his nature. And when it comes to the praise of God, likewise he says, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. And when we come to the courts of God's house, and when we profess to engage in the praise of God, can we honestly say before God, I'm doing it with all my heart? Or are we doing it as a matter of duty? Are we doing it because it's expected to be done? Or can we say, my whole heart is full of praise for God. And when I read his praise, when I sing his praise, I put my heart into it. Sometimes when we're engaged in the public worship of God, and when we're engaged in what we refer to as the praise of God, and we're supposed to be singing God's praise, one wonders how much heart is really in it. The psalmist says, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. You remember with the bringing up of the Ark of the Covenant, David danced and sang and played before the Lord, and he was despised by his wife, the daughter of Saul. And she accused him of acting foolishly and bringing shame upon himself as the king, behaving as he did in front of his people. But David was so engaged, his heart was so engaged in the praise of God, the worship of God, that he responded by saying, I'll be more vile even than now. I will praise God irrespective of what may be thought of me. And that's how the psalmist is here in this psalm, praising God with all his heart. So as we consider the psalm in a general way, we may look at what he gives as the reason for praising God. And that becomes very obvious. He is praising God for his overruling wisdom. That is seen in the psalm. He's praising God for his overruling wisdom in his own life and his own experiences. And then he is praising God for his unbounded faithfulness. He is praising God because he knows God. As in verse 10 he says, they that know thy name will put their trust in thee. Well, if they don't know thy name, they will not put their trust in thee. But how does anyone come to the conclusion there's a man, there's a woman, and they really do know God and they really do believe God? They that know thy name, thy reputation, who thou art, what will they do? They will put their trust in thee. That's how they will be discovered. They put their trust in thee. Now, then you can see that the psalmist, because of what he praises God for presently and in the past, he praises God with confidence for the future. But first of all, then, you will see in the psalm that the psalmist does not identify any particular occasion in his life or reign. And we are left to simply consider his meditations upon his experiences with God. Now, while when we go through the life of David, we could imagine, and many commentators have tried to identify this occasion or that event where David might well have written the words of this psalm. But there is a complete uncertainty about it. But nevertheless, having said that, there were occasions when we could well imagine David writing this psalm. And one such occasion is found recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And it is a very enlightening chapter, and while it is recorded again in the Chronicles, we are just looking here at what is recorded in Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 7, look at the circumstances. It came to pass, verse 1, when the king sat in his house. Now you can just imagine the scene. The king is sitting, relaxing perhaps, meditating, reflecting. He's in his house, and the Lord had given him rest round about from all his enemies. So it's a time of peace. It's a time when he can relax. He's not needing to go out to war. He's considering then God's dealings with him. And we read verse 2, that the king said unto Nathan the prophet, see now I dwell in an house of cedar, but the ark of God dwelleth within curtains. And Nathan said to the king, go, do all that is in thine heart, for the Lord is with thee. Now it's worth noting in passing that when the king David is in his house, look at where his mind is. When you and I are sitting in our houses, our homes, when we have the opportunity to relax, to sit back and reflect, where do our minds go? What do we spend our time thinking about? Here's the psalmist, and he's in his house, and his mind is going to the things of God, to the cause of God, to the glory of God, to the ark of God. That's what his mind is upon. And notice his company. His company is one of the great men of God, one of the faithful prophets of the Lord, Nathan. Nathan, who was not afraid to rebuke David when he needed it. It was Nathan that God sent to identify him and say, David, thou art the man, thou art the guilty man. You can see the kind of company that David had in his home. It was company that he could engage in speaking about the things of God. And Nathan encourages David, do what is in thine heart. He detected David had a real heart for God, for his cause, for the things of God. David expresses concern. I'm dwelling here in my home. I have everything I need. I'm living in luxury, as it were. I'm so comfortably off. And God dwells behind the curtains of the tabernacle. And David has a mind then. God deserves better than that. God should have something much superior to what presently houses the symbols of his presence. And he's able to converse openly to Nathan, opening up his heart to Nathan. You just think of the pleasant atmosphere. Just think how edifying, how pleasant. He has company that he can open up his heart to about the things of God. He's able to talk freely of the things that really mattered. The sad thing is that in many professing Christian homes, apart from family worship, if it's maintained, there is little or no conversation whatever about things spiritual. There is conversation about everything and anything but the things of God and the cause of God. And the sad thing is that those who are spiritually exercised often do not find, even amongst professing Christians, those of a like mind, those that they can open up to, and those who will be honest and open with them. And so you have this beautiful picture here of David in conversation with Nathan, and they are both talking together about the things of God. Now, you will see that Nathan then is given a message to David that very night, and so he goes and he speaks to David and tells him, gives him a message from God. And it is very interesting. We haven't time, because it's not our purpose, to expound the message, but simply to highlight one of the important matters that God mentions to David. Verse 8, Now therefore, so shalt thou say unto my servant David, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheepcot, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people, over Israel. And I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest, and have cut off all thine enemies out of thy sight, and have made thee a great name, like unto the name of the great men that are in the earth. And God, through Nathan, is reminding David of what he actually did himself. The Lord of hosts. This is what Nathan is to say to David. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. Now what does that immediately indicate? That God is in control over hosts, not only of angels, but hosts of men. And yet, though that is the case, I took thee. And where did I take thee from? I took thee from the sheepcote, from following sheep. I took thee from a very low estate, and I raised thee up to be ruler over my people Israel. I am the Lord of hosts. I could have taken the grand and the great, but I went to the sheepcote, and I took thee from the sheepcote, and I made thee ruler over my people Israel. Now what a change that brought into the experience of David. You imagine when he's penning the words of Psalm 9, and his mind goes back and he thinks, God came and he took me from the sheepcote, from following the sheep. My life was so different then. I had a life of peace. I could sit and I could sing, I could play my harp, and I could sing the praise of God as I tended the sheep. No one disturbed me. It was a relaxed, peaceable life. And God took me away from it. And he took me away from that private, peaceable, tranquil life. And he put me in a position through which I experienced trouble after trouble, trial upon trial. And yet, what does God say? Nathan, tell David, I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest. I was with thee. When Saul was hunting you out there in the wilderness, I was with thee. It wasn't just when you went out against Goliath, I was with thee. I was with thee at every step of every stage. I was with thee in every trial. I was with thee. In every trouble, with every problem, I was with thee. Whithersoever thou wentest, at every turn, I was there. I was taking care of you, David. Yes, I took you away from a lifestyle that probably David enjoyed immensely, and yet, like many a child of God, some I've heard them say they never had trouble in their lives until they became Christians. And some would say, when I was an unbeliever, I was a worldly person, I never experienced troubles, but when I became a Christian, my life from then on was full of trouble and full of trials. And here in this Psalm 9, David is writing of his experiences. And he says, I will praise thee, O Lord, for thy overruling wisdom in all my providences and in all my experiences. And you will see how he speaks in verse 3, when mine enemies are turned back. And then the heathen and more enemies, verse 6, O thou enemy, destructions are come to a perpetual end, and so on. And David is here praising God in spite of the intentions and the activities of his enemies. The only enemies he had when he was at the sheepcote were the wolves and the lions, and he was able to deal with them. But when he becomes king, and when he is in the service of God, he has trial upon trial upon trial. And yet, he doesn't lament. He doesn't complain. He doesn't murmur against God. He is well aware, as he says in verse 4, thou hast maintained my right and my cause. Thou sattest in the throne judging right. What does he mean by that? You can see that David, yes, he could identify his enemies. He could speak of his problems. They were very real. And yet, you can see where the eye of David is. It's on the throne. He's not concentrating upon what is happening around him, but he is looking beyond that and higher than that. And he says, thou sattest in thy throne. Whatever men were doing, God was still in the throne. And he says, God sat judging, making judgments. And every judgment was perfectly right. Every judgment was perfectly in order. God was wisely working out his purpose. And this is why the psalmist is praising God. God knows what he's doing. God always knew what he was doing. And then you will see that in verse 8 he speaks of this judgment further. He shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. And the psalmist here, perhaps many of his experiences were mysterious. And he might have been tempted to think, well, why is God doing this? Why is he doing that? Why have I, in spite of my righteousness, to go through this and to go through that? Why? But then, God's enthroned. And this is all according to his sovereign, wise judgment. And he has judged that this is necessary. He has judged this is good. And how oftentimes we forget this. We are so taken up with our particular problems or our particular providences. And we're trying to work it all out. And as we're doing it, we're concentrating on the problem, trying to solve it, trying to reason it through. David kept his eye upon the throne. And he was conscious God has judged that this particular trial is necessary. This particular problem in my experience is for my benefit. That's what the psalmist was realizing. And you see, the apostle Paul learned the same thing. He learned as he writes to the Philippians, he learned in whatsoever state he was in, therein to be content. And why is he speaking of contentment? Because the one who's on the throne judging has judged aright. He hasn't made any mistake in his judgment. He hasn't overlooked anything. He isn't ignorant of any aspect of all his work and all his outworkings. And the apostle said, I have learned in whatsoever state I'm in, therein to be content. He had learned to be in plenty and he'd learned to be in poverty. But he says, I have learned that God expects me to be content. And it has been a process. Learning is a process. And some of us are slower learners than others. And this is one of the things whenever Paul the Apostle speaks of learning, well then, automatically, he had a teacher. And God was teaching him. And do we learn from the great teacher, as the psalmist did? God has judged. Perhaps we might think of some experience that we'd rather be without. And we might well think to ourselves, this is the last thing I need. This is the last thing I need. And then we learn, God has judged, it is needful. God has judged, this is good for my child. God has judged, this is for his benefit or her benefit. That's what the psalmist, you see, is praising God for. He didn't have to work out why. He just had to look to the throne and he knew. God has it all in control. He's worked it all out. And therefore, he says, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. I have no reservations. I will praise thee with all my heart because I'm so content with what God has judged is good for me, is profitable for me, like the tried servant of God, Job, when he hath tried me, will I be destroyed? When he hath tried me, I'll be reduced to nothing. He didn't even think that way. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And the psalmist realizes here, and I believe that he's praising God because he has learned this. God's judgments are perfectly in order. And God's purposes are a multitude of various purposes that we could never even connect in our minds with our reasoning. And yet God has worked them all out, planned them all. He knows the end from the beginning. And that's why the psalmist is praising God. He's so satisfied that God knows what he's doing. Now, you will see then that the psalmist is also praising God for his unbounded faithfulness. And you will see, for example, from verse 10, as we've already mentioned, the psalmist says, they that know thy name, not merely know about thy name, or even know what thy name is, but they that know thy name, that are intimate with the name of God, who he is, what he does, what his character is. They will put their trust in thee. Why would they put their trust anywhere else? They know men. The psalmist knew men, how disappointing they could be, how fickle, how unreliable. He could not trust them. But there's one thing he's sure of, that they that know God, they can trust him. If they're intimate with him, they can rely upon him. They can trust him and they can entrust all their affairs to him. And this is what the psalmist says, for thou, Lord, hast not forsaken them that seek thee. Thou hast not forsaken them. Yes, this is the experience of the psalmist. The Lord tried me. The Lord tested me. God sent me trials in abundance, but never, never did he forsake me. And that's the testimony of the true child of God. God may test me. God may try me. God may bring me low, or he may lift me up. But this is certain, he never forsook me. And that's what the psalmist is saying here. Thou hast not forsaken them that seek thee. Why would anyone be seeking the Lord? They would be seeking out of a sense of need. They may well be seeking in the depths of trials, discouragements, even ready to despair. But this is what they discover. God may test me to the very limit, but there's one thing I know. He does not forsake. That's the experience of the child of God. Look at verse 12. When he maketh inquisition for blood, he remembereth them. He forgetteth not the cry of the humble. He doesn't forget it. Now the psalmist, on occasions, he was saying, how long wilt thou forget me, Lord? Shall it forever be? Here's what he's testifying to here. Even when God is dealing in judgment with his enemies, when he is dealing as a judge, a righteous judge, judging his enemies, even nations, the heathen, as David calls them. Yet he says this, he remembereth them, he forgetteth not the cry of who? The cry of the humble. Many cry, but it's not the cry of the humble. It is the cry of those who perhaps have needs. It is the cry of those who want deliverance. It is the cry of those who don't like the experience they're passing through or whatever. But it isn't the cry of the humble. And what a cry was heard when we go from the psalm and we go from David, the type, to the great anti-type, and we go to the cross, and we hear the cries from that cross, and there was absolutely no doubt, no question whatever, those cries were the cries of the humble. He humbled himself, and he became of no reputation. And how often the Savior himself would have perhaps read this psalm, chanted it in the temple, whatever, And this is what he pens, what David pens. He forgetteth not. He forgetteth not. He may not answer immediately, but he doesn't forget. And when he hears the cry of the humble, he doesn't forget it. It remains with him. He may not appear to respond immediately, but it doesn't leave God's memory. And this is what David has learned from experience. You go to the Psalm 40, what does he say? I waited for the Lord my God. I waited for the Lord my God and patiently did bear. At length to me he did incline my voice and cry to hear. You see, we can become so impatient with God, and then we can be tempted to think, well, because we cry to God and he doesn't respond as far as we're concerned, immediately we think, well, God hasn't either heard or he's not interested in responding. You see, God's in the throne. And the psalmist knew this. And he's judging aright. And he hears my cry. He understands it perfectly. But he passes judgment on my cry. And he passes wise judgment. And so he knows in his wisdom when to respond. The exact moment. He does it, not as it appears to be necessary according to my wisdom, but his wisdom. Little wonder the psalmist is praising God from his heart, because he understands the faithfulness of God. He doesn't forsake. He doesn't forget. Look at verse 18 again. For the needy shall not always be forgotten. The expectation of the poor shall not perish forever. He remembereth them. He forgetteth not the cry of the humble. God is faithful. That's what the psalmist experienced, and he's praising God for it. Now, when you go through the experiences, not just of David, but various people of God, the various servants of God, you find a similarity in their experiences. But as Paul said, as we've already mentioned, he had to learn. And even the apostle had to learn. It didn't come automatically to him that he just be content. I had to learn. And I had to learn to wait on God. And I had to learn to trust God. When Paul is writing to the Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians, and the chapter 10 of that epistle, he's explaining to the Corinthians something of the ways of God that they could expect from God in his dealings with them. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 9, neither let us tempt Christ. He's talking about the Israelites of old. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured. My. Have we ever murmured privately, secretly, murmured like the children of Israel? Paul writes to the Corinthians, he says, neither murmur ye. Remember what happened to the murmurers in the wilderness. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. And then this is what Paul writes. Now, all these things happened unto them for ensamples. Don't forget what happened to them. Don't forget how God dealt with them. Because what God did, how God responded to their tempting, to their murmuring, is example. He says, these things happened unto them, they happened, they experienced them, but they happened unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition. Why are they in record? To be a warning to us, to admonish us. And so God's word comes with an admonishment if we begin to murmur. Never complain about God's workings. Never, whatever we do, must we murmur against God's workings. Because here we are told that these things happened unto them, and thus they will happen unto us. That's what Paul's telling the Corinthians. If you begin to murmur in Corinth, then don't be surprised that God will deal with you as he dealt with them. For they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Don't get too confident. Don't think you're too secure. But be warned and be admonished. And then, this is what he writes. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. Now what did the children of Israel do in the wilderness? They murmured against God's trials. God sent them trials or temptations in the wilderness to test their faith and their confidence in him, to see how they would respond. They murmured. They didn't trust God. They murmured. They complained. We're tired of this manna. We want meat. We're tired of this wandering and thirst. We want water. And they complained and they murmured against God. And what is Paul write? There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. Doesn't matter what happens, God is faithful. Who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able? And sometimes God sends trials that are so severe that sometimes the children of God don't think they're going to survive. They're not going to come through it. But here's what Paul writes, and he knew what he was talking about. He could write from experience. God is faithful. God is faithful to you Corinthians. You're not very faithful. You're not very reliable. But God is faithful. And he's doing the right thing. And God is faithful. So he's sending the right providence at the right time, because he has judged it to be so. He knows what you need when you don't know what you need, or when you think that you know. And he says he will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. to bear it. Doesn't take it away necessarily. But he gives the grace to bear it. Because he is judged, it's better for you to bear it and to learn from it and to progress under it. That's what Paul had learned. And David here is praising God from his heart because he has learned to keep his eye on the throne and he has learned God doeth all things well. And that is the purpose of this very psalm, to instruct us that we might learn what he'd learned, what the apostle Paul had learned, that God judges absolutely rightly. And when he judges, then you and I need something. He will send it. And when he sends it, he will test and he will try. But he will always give the grace and the enablement to bear it. He will always, because he is faithful, give the grace to bear it. And that's what the psalmist is praising God with all his heart for. Because he knows God has never forsaken me. Never did he forget me. Never did he abandon me. He has been absolutely faithful to me. What a testimony. And what a reason to be praising God with all his heart. And if you and I know from experience who God is, we will know he is faithful, and we will know that he deserves our praise, not our complaints, not our murmurings, not our questionings. He sits on the throne. He judges aright. May God bless his word.